The headlines this hour. The death toll from Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip nears 20,700 as the regime's indiscriminate strikes rage on across the territory. The U.S. military targets the sites of Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization forces south of Baghdad, killing one person and injuring 24 others. Also in the headlines, reactions pour in following Israel's assassination of a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria, with Lebanon's Hezbollah describing it as a flagrant and shameless violation. Thanks for joining us. Israel keeps pounding Gaza, hitting areas across the besieged Palestinian territory with artillery fire and airstrikes. Airstrikes hit Bereish, al-Nusayrat, and al-Maghazi refugee camps. Attacks also hit near Nasser Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, killing several Palestinians. They are among some 250 people killed in the past 24 hours. The total death toll since October the 7th is nearing 20,700. Tens of thousands of others have also been injured. Most of the casualties are women and children. Palestinians say that they are unable to pull the bodies of their loved ones from under the rubble as their homes are in ruins.
After dinner, this strike happened here. I came back to find a house in this condition. I found only one of my children alive. The others, their mother, three daughters, and my four-month-old son, all still under. What can I do? I'm still beside the house. Why did the children have to die? Were the resistance fighters here in the house? Innocent children. What are we supposed to do? Where do we go? To whom do we express our concerns while the world watches us being slaughtered and die?
The World Health Organization has denounced Israeli attacks on refugee camps. In the words of the WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom, carnage has decimated the health system in Gaza. The UN agency warned that only 9 of Gaza's original 36 hospitals remain partially functional. Meanwhile, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, has said 142 of its employees have been killed in Israeli strikes over the past 2 months. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has lashed out at the Israeli premier after he expressed support for the displacement of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip to other countries. The ministry said Benjamin Netanyahu's plan, which he calls the voluntary migration of Palestinians from Gaza, reveals the two goals of the regime's genocidal war. It added that the crime of ethnic cleansing and displacement must stop before it's too late. Hamas also rejected the Israeli prime minister's plan for displacing Gazans as ridiculous. The resistance movement said Netanyahu's move is an excuse to prolong the regime's onslaught on Gaza. Hamas added that it will not allow Israel to obliterate the Palestinian cause or to remove Palestinians from their land. The Israeli military reports the killing of 2 more soldiers in southern Gaza as fierce fighting continues across the besieged territory. The regime military also said that 3 of its soldiers were also injured in the fighting in southern and in northern Gaza. Around 160 Israeli soldiers have been killed since the regime launched its ground invasion of Gaza some 2 months ago. However, the Hamas resistance movement says that fatalities among invading troops are much higher. On Monday, Hamas leader in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar, said Palestinian resistance fighters have inflicted heavy losses on the Israeli military in the ongoing battle in Gaza. According to Sinwar, some 5,000 Israeli forces have been killed or injured, and more than 750 military vehicles have been damaged or destroyed. The U.S. military has carried out fresh deadly strikes on Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization units south of the capital, Baghdad. The U.S. Central Command said that the strikes hit 3 facilities used by the PMU-affiliated groups. It claimed the move was in response to attacks on American personnel. 1 PMU force was killed and 24 others. Other people, including a dozen Iraqi Interior Ministry staff, were injured in the U.S. attack near the University of Babylon. That's according to Iraqi security sources. Baghdad has denounced the strikes as a hostile act. On Monday, a drone attack by the Iraqi resistance struck a U.S. base in Erbil, leaving 3 Americans injured. The resistance groups have recently carried out a number of attacks on U.S. facilities in Iraq and in neighboring Syria. The groups are outraged at the U.S. support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is revered in West Asia for its key role in helping the Iraqi and the Syrian armies eliminate the Daesh terror group. But now Israel has once again demonstrated its hostility toward the IRGC and the campaign against terrorism by assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. Brigadier General Said Razi Mousavi was assassinated in a missile strike on a neighborhood near the Sayyida Zainab Shrine in Damascus. He was in charge of the resistance force logistics in Syria. Mousavi was also a comrade of IRGC's late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. The IRGC strongly condemned Mousavi's assassination, saying the occupying Israeli regime will pay for this crime. Iran's president also issued a stern warning to Israel.
Undoubtedly, this malicious move is another sign of the usurping Zionist regime's frustration, helplessness, and weaknesses in the region, and it will certainly pay the price for this crime.
Iran's Prime Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian also said Mousavi bravely fought against terrorists to ensure the security of Iran and the region. Iran's foreign ministry also denounced Israel for killing the Iranian military commander. The ministry spokesman described the regime's move as cowardly.
Throughout its miserable existence, the Zionist regime has committed all kinds of crimes by repeatedly violating international regulations and norms. This vile and cowardly act is another indication of the terrorist nature of the Zionist regime.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement also reacted. It said the assassination of the Iranian military advisor in Syria adds another crime to the list of atrocities perpetrated by Israel. The resistance movement also described Mousavi's killing as a blatant and shameless attack. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement also slammed the assassination as a cowardly act. Julia Qassam is a journalist and political analyst who joins us from Beirut. Julia, welcome to the program. When you take a look at the fact that you have another senior figure, in this case being from Iran, in the logistics capacity as a military advisor, be taken out by Israel, which in itself is a crime because it's a targeted assassination. What kind of motives could Israel have had, given the aim of the position that this martyr at this point had?
Yeah, so it's clear to the Zionist entity itself that they have not been able to achieve one objective in their criminal and war crime ridden ground invasion of Gaza. All it accomplished, and it's clear as day, is massacres upon massacres of civilians, in addition to the massacres of civilians from air attacks. And with the United States and the Zionist entity pushing the Zionist entity to change course on what they call basically shift strategy, what it is it's a withdrawal from their losses in the Gaza Strip, shifting over to returning air attacks on Gaza. The Zionist entity was unsuccessful in convincing the United States to allow it to expand its aggression on Lebanon and push Hezbollah past the Latani River, 8 kilometers north. So with the unsuccess, with the lack of success in getting the U.S. to back it on the Lebanese front, the Zionist entity now turns to criminal and cowardly attacks on Syria and on Iranian targets in Syria in hopes of getting, forcing essentially the U.S. to back it in a regional expansion that would, one, distract the world from its from basically resigning to its losses against Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and two, to get the international backing and support from the United States and the European Union that it wasn't able to get against Lebanon this last month, into basically forcing them and to. Forcing them to back it in a confrontation with Iran. Now, Gaza essentially what the Zionist entity, with all of their armored vehicles and all of their helicopters and air power, they've been unable to secure any military victory against a force of tens of thousands of resistance fighters that exclusively fight on the ground, man to man. So what they want to do is try to hit military infrastructure all the way over in Iran, which of course does not have anything to do with the state of objectives that they weren't able to really make any progress in confronting and so-called defeating Hamas. So it's just another cowardly deflection, and of course this will be met with an appropriate response at the timing of the resistance.
Well, there are different dynamics involved here. If you want to take a look at the fact that you have this Iranian senior figure to have been assassinated, I'm guessing that Israel, well, I'm not guessing, but many say that Israel has always had the intention of pulling Iran into a war with the backing of the U.S. and the cooperation and action by the U.S. But it doesn't seem like there's an appetite there, or is there? Because if that comes into play, isn't Israel risking itself when you have Hezbollah right there? And if obviously if Iran comes into the picture, then Hezbollah would react against Israel. And we know that Hezbollah has not shown the maximum capacities that it has when it comes to Israel, especially in the skirmishes that we have seen recently.
So the U.S. seems to understand this a little bit more than the Zionist entity. The Zionist entity itself, it's very rash, and it knows that it can't really do anything, let alone face Hamas, face the Palestinian resistance, or commit any of its war crimes against civilians, since it's unable to really fight against the resistance with the full backing and support from the U.S., which has given it the entire range and entire ability to commit its war crimes that it can. So the Zionist entity believes that U.S. backing is just what it needs to be able to, to fight Iran, to fight Hezbollah in Lebanon. But the U.S. itself is very cautious because it knows what the stakes are a little bit better. Hezbollah so far, even with desecuritizing the entire border with occupied Palestine, even with all the damage that it has done to the Zionist entity in the north, exhausting them on the northern front as they were pretty much taking a beating in the Gaza Strip, it's only used up 5% of its capacity yet. So the U.S. is obviously very cautious and very understanding of the stakes that the Zionist entity and itself has if there were to a confrontation with Hezbollah to take place. And so, of course, if that's something that they want to avoid, of course, an all-out war with Iran would be much worse in their view. So there's just a little bit of a split in judgment there, not out of any kind of moral assessment, but of just willingness, as the Zionist entity itself is in just a complete loss point. It knows that the second this war ends, it will be clear that they lost essentially against the resistance, and it would further accelerate the dissolving of the occupation to begin with.
Sure.
So it's just another way of buying time and trying to force the U.S. to completely destroy the capabilities of all of the arms of the resistance access for them.
Thank you so much, Julia Hassam, journalist and political analyst from Beirut. Thank you. Moving on, U.S. police have clashed with pro-Palestinian protesters and arrested several of them as they gathered in New York City, again, to vent their anger at the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. Protesters converged on Midtown Manhattan, chanting slogans like Christmas is canceled here and long live the Intifada, an Arabic word for the Palestinian uprising. They also carried banners reading No Joy in Genocide and and while you are shopping, bombs are dropping. Protesters also call for an immediate end to the Israeli aggression against Gaza and the occupation of Palestine. Over the weekend, pro-Palestinian rallies were held in several other U.S. cities, including Chicago and Los Angeles. Many of those protests were peaceful. Organizers are using the Christmas holidays to raise more awareness of the Israeli bloodshed on the land where Jesus Christ was born. Muti Abu Musaba is at Deir al-Balah, another one of the regions where the Israeli regime forces has been targeting, which he joins us now to tell us more. Muti, at this point, we know that the strikes are continuing. Tell us what you have, but also I'm curious if Deir al-Balah is also being targeted, because we know yesterday that there were reports of it, as you relate to us, of how it was targeted.
Yes, actually, the Israeli air force, the Israeli warplanes, and the Israeli occupation forces actually intensified their airstrikes across all areas of Gaza Strip. In Khan Yunis city, moments ago, the Israeli fighter jets actually targeted a residential building, leaving at least 10 Palestinian civilians dead. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery on the ground maintained its vehement attacks and shelling towards all areas of Gaza Strip as well. We are talking about the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, even Jabalia city and the Jabalia refugee camp, and even Gaza city. And today, and since the last night so far, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling in an unprecedented way. Let me say the eastern parts of Al Burej refugee camp and Al Maghazi refugee camp. We are talking about intensified shelling targeting the Palestinian residential buildings and houses here in the eastern parts of the central area of Gaza Strip. In the meantime, the Palestinian resistance on the ground is still engaged in a fierce and drastic gunfight with the Israeli occupation forces on the ground. And till this moment, according to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, that that they received at least two Palestinian women, in addition to dozens of the Palestinian civilians who were wounded over this kind of continuous Israeli shelling, targeting and reaching those civilians, civilian areas. So we are talking about increase in the cruelty of the Israeli shelling targeting those areas. As I've mentioned before, that apparently the Israeli occupation forces on the ground are planning to attack those areas and to carry out another ground offense against Al Burej refugee camp and the eastern parts of Al Maghazi and Deir al-Balah city.
Thank you so much. Be safe. Muti Abu Musaba there at Deir al-Balah, our correspondent. Thanks so much for being with us. That brings an end to this edition of our program.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
According to UNICEF, Gaza is now the world's most dangerous place to be a child. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "Every child in Gaza knows the whistle. It is the sound of a rocket dropping on a house. Every child knows that when you hear the whistle, it means that it is not your house being bombed, because you will not hear anything when you are bombed. Children in Gaza can tell an F-16 from an F-35 from a drone. They know a whole litany of things that are beyond their years, things that they shouldn't have to know. Over 10,000 children have been killed in Gaza. The children who have survived have seen their families, friends, and neighbors killed by the Zionist regime's army. They have seen near death by starvation and death by suffocation, under the rubble, and by explosion. Children in Gaza do not have the luxury of death being a mystery. It is a daily presence." If a child in Gaza is hungry, they know not to throw a tantrum. They have become used to feeling hunger. The same is true of the cold. Every child in Gaza now knows what it is to be unhoused, to sleep in a tent or on the streets in winter. They feel the immense fear and daily trauma of non-stop Israeli regime attacks over their heads. Sometimes the shock overtakes them during the airstrikes, and they cannot even cry in these moments. They either tremble in fear or are paralyzed by it. This world is not what the children of Gaza deserve. They deserve to feel safe, warm, and healthy, to have full stomachs. In their dreams, the children can retreat to worlds where all they have to do is play and eat candy. The morning is a different story. There is no chance of a normal childhood in Gaza. The Zionist regime has stolen their chance at that. We are not sure that there is any child left in Gaza in any true sense of the word. Gaza is now the world's most dangerous place to be a child. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera English reported, "Limited access to clean water and sanitation amid the Zionist regime's relentless bombardment pose a grave risk to children in Gaza," the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has warned. Huge masses of displaced people herded into the southern Gaza Strip by the war are accessing only 1.5 to 2 liters of water per day, well below the recommended requirement for survival, the UN agency stated recently. The crisis, antagonized by limited aid deliveries and the destruction of infrastructure, puts huge numbers of vulnerable children at risk of disease, it added. Pushed by the Zionist regime's continued onslaught across the enclave, hundreds of thousands of people, around half of them estimated to be children, have been pushed into the city of Rafah since early December, and are in desperate need of food, water, shelter, medicines, and protection, UNICEF has said. As demand continues to rise, water and sanitation systems in the city are in an extremely critical state. UNICEF says that 3 liters are required daily for survival. The amount rises to 15 liters if water required for washing and cooking is also counted. Catherine Russell, UNICEF Executive Director, said, "Access to sufficient amounts of clean water is a matter of life and death, and children in Gaza have barely a drop to drink. Children and their families are having to use water from unsafe sources that are highly salinated or polluted. Without safe water, many more children will die from deprivation and disease in the coming days. Using unsafe water and lack of hygiene is a dramatic risk factor for children who are more vulnerable to waterborne disease, dehydration, and malnutrition, according to UNICEF. Humanitarian aid deliveries simply do not meet the needs of the population for basic survival. This causes a shortage in water and hygiene products that is further compounded by the fact that a large percentage of sanitation facilities have been either destroyed or simply cannot accommodate the large number of displaced Palestinians congregating in specific locations." Russell said, "We are doing everything we can to meet the needs of the people in Gaza, but the equipment and supplies we've managed to provide are far from enough. The constant bombing, along with the restrictions on materials and fuel allowed into the territory, are preventing critical progress. We urgently need these supplies to repair damaged water systems." Doctors and aid workers have been warning of the spread of the disease and epidemics since the start of the Zionist regime's indiscriminate bombing campaign. According to data from the World Health Organization, WHO, from November 29th to December 10th, cases of diarrhea in children under 5 jumped 66% to 59,895 and increased by 55% for the rest of the population. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said recently that the WHO has reported cases of meningitis, chickenpox, jaundice, and upper respiratory tract infections as well. The UN Health Agency cautioned that the figures likely did not provide the full picture because of a lack of complete information with the health system and other services in Gaza near collapse.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Israeli entity continues to wreak havoc in the West Asia region. 80 days have come and gone since the start of its genocide on Gaza. It has also increased its night raids and assaults on Palestinians in the West Bank. The regime has staged more attacks on South Lebanon as well as on Syria. And on Monday, in a targeted missile strike, it assassinated Iran's top military man in Syria, Commander Sayed Reza Mousavi, who headed the Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps in Syria as Iran continues to assist the Syrian government in its fight against terrorists. Mousavi was a close companion of the martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who the U.S. assassinated almost 4 years ago in Iraq. I'd like to now welcome my guests to the spotlight. Anthony Hall, professor of globalization, Lethbridge University, out of Lethbridge. And Glenn Deason, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo. Thank you both for being with me, starting it off with Anthony. The Israeli regime has always been a rogue entity. However, it just seems to be exponentially getting worse and just increasing its terror throughout the region. If you agree with that, why do you think it is the case, and what is it trying to accomplish?
Well, there's an individual by the name of Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm getting feedback in my, I'm talking against myself if there needs to be an adjustment here, but he is
How about letting the other fellow start?
Okay, we'll do that. I'll come back to you then, Anthony.
Yeah.
Glenn, your thoughts. I'll just throw that question at you, basically, in looking at this entity and what it is doing. Your thoughts on it. Is it getting worse, or what is its goal and what's happening?
Well, I think that the goal of Israel will be twofold. One, of course, they want to go after Hamas and get back the hostages. But, of course, as we've seen over the past 80 days with the mass killings of Israel, of Palestinian civilians, it's quite obvious that there's a second objective too, which is to resolve what then can be referred to as the Palestinian question, because there's limited options for Israel, because what are they supposed to do on this territory, which they envision to be greater Israel? There's the demographics is quite evenly split between the Jews and the Palestinians. So it's obviously that they've sabotaged very actively the two-state solution for years. And that begs the question, how can you resolve this? So you can either all live in one state, but then, of course, it wouldn't be a Jewish state anymore. Or second, you can have apartheid, which would be what the West Bank is living under, but that's also not sustainable. And I think there's a third option, which is ethnic cleansing or even genocide. And I think that we definitely see the ethnic cleansing is being pushed very hard, which is why they're trying to, well, not just massacre a lot of people, but also drive them out of Gaza as well. So I think that this is, they try to take, I guess, advantage of the heated situation in order to resolve what they see as a greater challenge, which would be getting rid of the Palestinians. So it's quite a dangerous stage they've entered. The fact that they're also prepared to escalate the conflict and spread it. I'm thinking then into Lebanon, Syria. Hopefully we stayed cleared of Yemen, but even trying to pull Iran into this. I mean, there seems to be among some an ambition for much greater war. But that being said, not even Israel is one entity. I think Netanyahu obviously represents more of a hawkish and aggressive element within Israeli state, of course, not only aspect of it. And I think the same applies for the United States. There's many there who sees this as an opportunity to spread the war and go after other rivals from again, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, Yemen. So I think there's different aspects of the American and Israeli government pulling this in different directions. So again, many different objectives, many different players. So overall, it's a situation which can be quite chaotic very quickly.
Okay. Well, Anthony, hopefully you can hear me a little bit better. With the Zionist regime and its targeting of the IRGC commander Seyed Reza Mousavi in Damascus, why do you think that it has targeted him at this point in time when the regime is in the middle of a genocide in Gaza?
What's going on is, yes, Netanyahu is one player among many, but he knows where many of the pieces are. This is his moment. He is essentially trying to draw Iran into some kind of regional conflict, even a worldwide conflict. And he knows that in order to draw Iran in, Iran you know, he's provoking, killing Soleimani, killing the heir to Soleimani in Syria right around this time of season, reminding us what happened 4 years ago. This is very provocative. He's trying to provoke Hezbollah. And the plot, from his point of view, is he needs to negotiate things in a way that the U.S., if Iran just comes into the conflict based on these bits and pieces of provocation which we're seeing, then he's kind of in the driver's seat. He needs to bring in the USA. And gosh knows what's really going on between the USA and Israel. But all the time they have been planning this. They planned this thing in Gaza together. But, you know, now the timing is everything. And Iran is really the center of the show. And it's very interesting to be talking to you on Christmas Day at this very moment in history.
Yeah, and it is quite an interesting Christmas in general. We see what is going on in general. Well, Glenn, let's look at that. I mean, Anthony talked about that he feels that it's a provocation and wanting to get a wider war. Well, let's look at that, because we know that the regime is having quite a difficult time, actually, in Gaza. Yes, they have been very successful in killing women and children, have not been as successful against the Palestinian resistance on the ground. And many say needing a way out or a way to expand this in order to get other players involved. Your thoughts on that side? Is it that they want Iran and Hezbollah and then the U.S. and NATO and create this critical situation that it's global war? Or your assessment of what the regime is doing?
Well, usually what makes Israel quite successful is it's able to pin all other actors against each other and pick out one target, one adversary to destroy. This is what it usually does. So this very active effort to provoke other actors and make it more of a regional war, it does break a bit from Israel's habits. But that being said, what it's doing now in Gaza isn't working simply. I mean, they killed now more than 20,000 people, and only a tiny minuscule of them are actually Hamas fighters. And, you know, with these mass killings, of course, they're going to create a lot of more resistance fighters, which will join Hamas or any other resistant movement. So from this perspective, it's counterproductive even what they're doing. So I think, but they're not going to back down either. So I think that's why they're going, you know, doubling down. And also, as long as they're just massacring civilians in Gaza, you know, the international community is not very sympathetic. The standing of Israel in the world and the United States is dropping quite rapidly because of what's being done. However, if they can make this into a wider war, you know, bring in Hezbollah or Syria or even Iran, this would be very different because under these circumstances, this actor has been demonized for so many years in the West that it would be much easier to form coalitions, get a more support from the wider West. So, again, I think it's also an opportunism because they have a lot of adversaries. Their neighbors have been growing much stronger over the years. And I think there's simply an interest to address this issue and start to go after more of their adversaries. But again, this is a recipe for disaster. I think, especially in the United States, I think there's many who have more apprehension and more caution trying to put some restraints on Israel, but obviously not enough.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Anthony, do you believe that if there was a wider situation, for example, if Syria, Iran, Hezbollah were involved, as Glenn said, these entities, countries have been demonized for so many years, that would make it easier for the United States to form a coalition? Although, let us say that the United States was not successful in even forming a coalition against the Yemeni military recently for the Red Sea. So, your thoughts?
The situation in the Red Sea and in Yemen, vis-a-vis shipping on the Red Sea, and the chaos that the, what do I call them, the Ansarullah, the Yemenis, the Houthis, this has become a regional situation. This has been the wild card. Now, what makes this so unpredictable is that the Yemeni force are truly idealistic. They are in it to defend the besieged people of Gaza against a genocide, and that is their position. And they have withstood a onslaught, much like the people of Gaza are going through right now. And so they have used their strategic position and have created really a chaos. Their position is no ships that are going into Israel or coming from Israel. It's having an enormous effect on the Israeli economy. It's creating all of this uncertainty. Saudi Arabia won't join this group of the willing. I notice my own country, Canada, is joining it. Why would we do so? I'm very angry at my own government. They haven't consulted us. So this situation in Yemen really has made it a much more regional kind of situation already. And it is creating a whole list of scenarios, including in mundane things like the insurance industry, over how they will deal with this. And the container fleets that go from China to Europe. This is a major intervention in the whole free flow of the global economy, as it should be. And now U.S. and Israel have to face this, and no doubt they will downplay it. But I'm thinking the regional war is already on. It happened with that intervention on the Red Sea, that very principled, bold, and strategic intervention by the people we used to call the Houthis, who are now really speaking for a nation state called Yemen.
Right, yeah, definitely. The Yemeni military, they have been exceptional. Well, I want to go back to the assassination that has taken place. Our correspondent in Syria had said that in the previous days there had been reconnaissance planes, Israeli and American reconnaissance planes, over that area. Do you think that it's a possibility that Israel coordinated this with the United States, Glenn?
Well, it's possible, and well, it shouldn't be surprising. I think both Israel and the United States has demonstrated their preparedness to attack and kill Iranians abroad. Of course, with Soleimani setting a very dangerous precedent. So I think that the objective, of course, from the Americans and the Israelis would be to signal a deterrence. So they want to deter Iran from having any role in the region. Keep in mind, every time we use, when they use the language to describe Iran allies, they always refer to them as Iranian supplied, Iranian supported, suggesting that Iran is always standing, pulling, you know, the threads of its mere puppets or its vassals. But, you know, a lot of these are actual allies and partners of Iran. And, you know, the notion that they can just assassinate any Iranian military leader as they're some part of a terrorist group or something is, of course, quite absurd. But they kind of created this whole narrative now that Iran's role in the region is one of terrorism, even though they're the one, you know, helping Syria to fight terrorists within Syria. But nonetheless, that's what they've taken on themselves. And so it's, of course, it's hard to say if the United States, I haven't seen any evidence who supplied the intelligence, but, you know, there's few restraints left. We see the same in Ukraine. The Americans are bragging that they are giving, you know, the intelligence to to assassinate and kill Russian leaders. So, you know, if they're willing to do this against the world's largest nuclear power, I don't see any reason why there would be any restraints against killing Iranian military leaders. So, again, there's new lines being crossed every single day.
Indeed, new lines are being crossed, and hypocrisy more and more exposed. Anthony, we have seen during the last 80 days with the genocide in Gaza that many people are waking up, especially in some of the Western countries, that they were not aware of the crimes of the Israeli regime. At the same time, do you think that people are also becoming aware of the total hypocrisy of the Israeli regime and the American regime in the region? Just as Glenn was just talking about, for example, killing an Iranian commander, and then basically because of, they say, he's a terrorist, when we know Iran has been at the forefront in fighting terrorism, just as we know that Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was at the forefront in fighting Daesh, and yet the Americans killed him. Do you think this part is being exposed, that more and more people are really understanding the roots of this hypocrisy that comes from Washington itself?
Well, there's a lot of ignorance to overcome. But yes, of course, people are waking up to the extent of the crimes against humanity that are taking place. You know, my understanding of Iran since I first visited there in 2014 is Iran, since 1979, has a heritage of dealing with oppressed people, people who are pushed to the margins. And the Houthis of Yemen would be an ideal example. And while we're on the subject of Soleimani, let's pay him respect. Let's pay this martyr great respect and look to what's going on in Yemen, for instance, and see his mark. See his mark in Hezbollah. See his mark in Syria. See his mark in Iraq. See his mark in coordinating an approach which we call the resistance, the axis of resistance, that the bullies of the West, that the inheritors of this imperial ruthlessness of the British Empire, of the American Empire, now embodied and almost epitomized by what we're seeing in with the government of Israel as their most ruthless, you know, manifestation of a principled and unprincipled maniacal, genocidal regime acting in the name of some imperial vision, some Zionist vision. So the ability of people on the margins, smaller people, to become equipped, to get a sense of standing up against the dominant powers of the world. And now this applies to BRICS. It applies to Russia. It applies to China. It applies to Iran, and it applies to, you know, even Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it's moving, this BRICS idea. So I think the empire, the entity that the axis of resistance is opposing, they're defining themselves much more clearly. It's becoming much more clearly, even in the West, that we, the people in the West, really don't have any say in how our governments work. Whatever the opinion polls say to Biden, or, you know, that there is a momentum and there is a concentration of military, intelligence, media, judicial, psychological warfare, pressure and power and contamination of a decent society, that we need a rule of law. We need immediate genocide procedures at the International Court of Justice, not at the sad, corrupt ICC, but at the International Court of Justice to enforce the Genocide Convention right now, because it's obviously being violated. And where is the trust in international law, in the United Nations, unless there is something dramatic, like an actual trial on the Genocide Convention, which is clearly being violated? Why would we have any trust in international institutions right now? The system requires some kind of organization of people along the lines that Soleimani had in has delivered, has left his legacy. Iran is the inheritor of this legacy. The Houthis are a perfect example of a small marginalized people who are now making a huge difference in the world because of their principled stand.
Okay.
And we need to follow that example.
All right. And we're looking probably at the end of the rules-based system, and so it'll be interesting times to see what comes. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with me. We're out of time. Anthony Hall, Professor of Globalization out of Lethbridge, and Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway out of Oslo. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and other group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah,
who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. We have Brother Suhail as the guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Suhail. Welcome to the show.
Oh, alaikum salam. Thank you for having me in the show.
Okay, Brother Suhail, for today's discussion, we want to talk about how we can avoid negative thoughts and how we can think positively according to Islamic beliefs. So, the main question is this: how to avoid negative thoughts?
First, we need to understand that where do negative thoughts rise from? So, as we know that a mind is a complex discussion as it is, as the thoughts that you hear in your mind have roots in other aspects of your personality. There are also outside influences that can affect your mind. When it comes to bad thoughts, The most effective strategy is to ignore those thoughts, especially at the time. If you don't do this, thinking over a thought inadvertently causes more damage to thoughts, and a person get into a mess. So normally when you have a negative thought, try to focus your mind into a positive thought or somewhere else. Just divert it. The moment you divert, you lose track of this thought. The same way that we lose the track of Salah and our mind moves away.
Yes.
And it's after some time, because we want to come back to Salah, that's when we come back. Our thought comes back to Salah. But if we don't want to come back to Salah, then till the end of Salah, our thoughts are outside. I'm not speaking that it's a good thing, but I'm just giving you an effect. If you just come out of whatever thought, whether good or bad, there is a possibility you won't remember unless you want to come back yourself. So in that sense, if you are able to divert your thought into something else,
yes,
just temporary, you will lose that track. The moment you lose that track and you don't think about it again, you will be able to move on to some other things.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. And this thinking positively is not just giving yourself null hopes, isn't it?
No.
Null and void hopes that, okay, let's think positive, everything is okay.
No, they say that...
You have to be realistic about the surroundings, isn't it?
Yeah, so in regards to the positive thoughts, it's not only null expectation or hope, because it actually has an essence. So they say that a person who sleeps well, who wakes up well, who is able to get everything good, is not able to see anything bad, because he's happy from home. He came out from home with happy. There was no argument with the wife, no argument with the children. Alhamdulillah, you come out, you go to the job with this kind of happiness, that this happiness becomes a way of being able to spread within your members, now whether your colleagues or anyone else, because of this positive aura that you have with yourself. You see, and this is where you see that the body itself doesn't have that capacity, but because of the soul and the aura surrounding the soul, it's able to give everyone else that kind of vibe to be able to see things positively. So even those people that have negative approach, when they come towards you and while you're talking to them, they're able to get away of that negative approach. And that's why they say that whenever anyone is stressed in life, he needs to go to talk to a person, psychiatrist or anyone else. Just talking does relieve stress, you see. And that talk, obviously, you have to have a positive idea, thinking that you're able to submit to the other person, so for him to be able to come away from that negative thought and away from that stress. So this is one of the ways, yeah.
That's all right.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir. Praise to Allah, all glories to Allah. We
worship Allah and no one but Allah. Okay, sometimes these thoughts